All right, good morning. Welcome to Over Years Now's 52nd birthday party. My name is Colleen, a compulsive reader and your moderator for today's panel.
Hi, Colleen.
Hi. Let us begin with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Are there any newcomers or members in their first 30 days? If so, please stand and introduce yourself so we may welcome you. In the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, page 100, it states, when we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. We're honored to have these longtime members of OA who are willing to share their experience, strength, and hope. Each person will speak for 20 minutes, then we'll have time for questions and answers. There's an Ask It basket that's going around the room. Please jot down your questions so they can be addressed by our panel members during the Q&A. And now I will invite our longtimers to come up and speak.
We just negotiated the whole thing. Hi, everybody. I'm Barbara, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi.
I have been in program for 31 years, but I have 27 years of abstinence, so that gives you a clue as to how hard it was for me to get this program. I came in so wrapped up, so tight, that I was not receptive to anything. And it has still taken me a long time to learn what I have to learn the lessons, and I still work on it, and I still work on it actively. So our subject today is more or less how we do it, how we stay in there for the long run. I have been within 5 pounds of the weight I am now for 27 years. And I do that by having found a food plan that's very flexible, and it works for me. And I can go around the world to any place for dinner and find something that I can eat. And I do not go out there and eat freely because I'm not able to do that. So I write down my food plan in the morning, and if I make a change in it, I write the change down the next day, because that was the first place I had to get honest. And that honesty has slowly seeped into the rest of my life, and slowly I've learned how to do everything else that I need to do on this program. If I could have been better from the beginning, I would have been better from the beginning. I really was very well-meaning and very motivated, but I didn't know. And it's been my experience that over the years in this program, I've had to learn how to live, and I've had to learn how to think, and it's taken me a long time to do that. I recently, 3.5 months ago, fractured a bone in my leg, and I'm not able to exercise, and I haven't for 3.5 months, and that's the first time since 1975 that I haven't exercised several times a week. And I put on a few pounds, and one day I looked myself in the mirror straight in the eye, and I said, Barbara, you have one choice. You are going to turn into a fat middle-aged lady, or you're going to eat less. Those are the only options. There's nothing else in between. And I don't want to be fat. I like staying in my small-sized clothing, and I have been willing to eat less, and I'm telling you it's hard because there's no margin of error there. no, having a little bit more this day, and it's okay. And then I had to laugh because I'm not middle-aged anymore. Really past that. But I don't think of myself that way because I don't live that way. I live in the middle of my life and I'm good. And I've been frightened because this bone fracture is from osteoporosis. And I don't want to end up to be somebody who is not active and free in my own body. And like everything else I've had to learn in this program, I just have to do what's in front of me and learn how to think. Now, it means that I'm going to be going to an osteoporosis doctor next month and I'm going to find out what to do and I'm going to do it. And I just have to learn how to figure it out. Now, I've been in program for a long time, and I've done different things as I've gone along. But one thing I've done, my experience is that sometimes it's easy to abstain, and sometimes it's difficult. And when it's difficult, well, let's start with when it's easy. When it's easy, it does not mean that I am so terrific. I have learned humility around here, and I've known that it's by the grace of God that it's easy for me. And when it's difficult, I've learned that I need help. And that means that I have a sponsor. Over the years, I've had a few different sponsors. They've all been women who have been older than I am. And they are somebody who I can talk to about anything and who know me, really know me. And so when I need help, I need to call my sponsor and say things like, I'm not going to eat after dinner because night eating was my thing. Or this is my dinner, this is my dessert for dinner, and that's it. And one time or two times doesn't always do it. Sometimes I need to do that more than that, longer than that. But always, always, when that happens, it took me a long time to realize it, there's something I'm eating over. There's something that's bothering me. And until I deal with that, I'm going to have trouble. And until I deal with that, sometimes by just writing it out, facing something that's bothering me, and then it's over with. And sometimes it's more than that. Sometimes I'm just not seeing life right. Like I said, I think I would do better if I knew how to do better, but I haven't learned when I was young the skills of living that I needed to know because I didn't think about it right, and I've had to learn to change my thinking. And that has meant going back into the steps and going back into steps 4 through 9 and really digging out what's going on there. And I did this again about 5 years ago. My daughter got married and I was not too thrilled with her choice of husband and I said something to her and our relationship was really disrupted for a long time. We got through the wedding, we got through the time before and after that, but there was a barrier between us that she put up because she was so angry at me because of what I said. And I didn't know if that was ever going to be healed. And I was wrong in saying something to her. It was not my business. And so I started to do the steps again, all of them, including the 4 through 9. And I went into depth with them, and I did them with different books than I had done them before. One of them was The Steps We Took, which is Joe McHugh, who is an AA step expert who has really analyzed them, and another book too. And I went deeper than I had ever been able to go before. I just didn't have, it's progressive. I was able to go deeper. And what I came out of at the end of that process of doing those steps again was an inner sense of self that I had never had before. And that has lasted for a long time. And now, probably triggered in part by this leg that I've had to deal with, but not really. I've had to look at my relationships, and I've had to look at how critical I am of other people and of myself. And so I'm starting a whole another process of examining that in whatever it's going to take. I don't know what it's going to take. Probably doing the steps again. Right now it's just doing some writing and taking a look. And I'm telling you, I cannot believe how difficult it is for me to give up this being critical. Give up this expectations of myself where I don't meet up and I am not at peace and in comfort with myself. And criticizing other people. A friend of mine did something mean to me. I was allergic to her cats and she didn't like it. It's just a little incident. Not a big deal, but an incident. And in me, we have figured out what we're going to do about the issue. The two of us have figured that out together. But in me, I want to say to her, you were really mean to me. And I didn't say that. And I am not comfortable not having said that to her because this is like an issue. And I finally called my sponsor yesterday and I said, it is incredibly difficult for me not to go back to this friend of mine and say to her, you did the wrong thing. And yet I know that if I do that, it's going to start something with this friend that makes this more important and more difficult than I want to deal with. And it isn't necessary. If she thinks she did something wrong, she'll deal with it. And if she doesn't, my saying it to her isn't going to make any difference. What matters for me is that I handle myself in the way that I want to handle myself. And I can tell, I'm still thinking about this. This has been going on for a week. And I still, in me, want to say something to her. So now, this is the process that I do. I have to go back and say, where does this come from? Where is that need in me to say something? And it comes from my childhood, where something about the way I was born made me harder to get along with, and I almost died. At the age of 3 weeks, my parents found a wet nurse for me because I wasn't able to eat. And that's where my compulsive overeating started, because I felt like I was starving and I started to have issues around food there, although it didn't show up till later in my life. And so when somebody does something that I don't like, or do, like this friend of mine, there is in me a little screaming baby that says, no, that's not right. And I've had to learn to look at that and to deal with that part of myself that still is trying to solve the problems of being an infant, solve the problems of being a little girl and the child of parents who were immigrants and were not well adjusted in some ways to American life, and being the oldest child, it was challenging. And so if I'm still trying to solve those problems now, after many years of program and in this stage of my life, I'm not living correctly now. I can't. And like when I have a sponsee, I never worry about how to deal with the issues that are this person's issues, because they come up. They just come up. Whatever that person has to deal with, it will show up sooner or later. And the same for me. And so if I have something to deal with regarding the feelings I had as a child and the way I grew up and the way I saw life and my need to be right and my need to tell you that you're not doing the right thing for me, it will show up in just something really simple like this altercation with a friend or criticalness of my husband or whatever. It will show up, and that's when I will have to deal with it. And that is the most important part of how I've been able to live my life and been able to abstain all of these years, that when it comes up, I have program. I am not alone. I go to my sponsor, I do the steps, I write, I think, I talk, and I get better. Now with my daughter, this one that I had this problem with, this is going to be, it's interesting to me. She adopted a baby, the baby's 9 months old, so it was exactly 9 months ago yesterday that she brought the baby home from the hospital. And this is a really terrific little baby, just really precious. And my daughter's doing a great job with him. She's raising him better than I could. And she knows I feel that way. And she lets me in. And we've had a relationship all these years. There has not been conflict all these years, but there was a little bit of a barrier, and that's down. We spend Tuesdays together, the three of us with the baby. We all three just adore it. And she knows that I completely approve of her and approve of what she's doing. And all those old issues or barriers have disappeared. Makes me so happy. Makes her happy too. And now I have to look at this and how loving approval, and this is what I'm working on now, of others instead of critical judging is the way to live. And I didn't know that. I didn't know it. And to change this habit inside of me is going to be a challenge. Life is. It's challenging to eat less. It's challenging to try to work with my leg so that it heals well and not to be able to work out. It's challenging to get up every day and do my life. When I first started in program, I thought, if I get up and do my best today, that's got to be good enough. And that helped me. When I first got abstinent, there were some things that helped me. One of the things that helped me is that if I just had to eat and there was just no way I could deal with it, even after calling or whatever, I learned to have better binges. And better binges was eating broccoli and apples, I mean, big, heavy, bulk food that when I woke up the next day didn't do any damage. You know, my weight wasn't up or I wasn't, you know, sick and logy from what I had eaten the day before. I hadn't sold my time in the future for the sake of a brief moment in the present. And that helped me. been baby steps. I don't know if there's going to be a time when I say, I'm fixed, you know. I think maybe not. I think I've had to learn to be self-accepting where I am. And one of the things that I've thought about is if I don't accept and love myself and approve of myself, because you can see that I didn't have this as a child and that was my issue through life, how will anybody else love and accept me? We broadcast how we feel about ourselves. It's subtle, it's there. People read it, they see it. They know what we expect from others, how we expect to be treated, and they treat us that way. And so if I want that inner something to be whole and treated well in all the ways I can be, like I have with my daughter, it's up to me to give it to myself. And then it doesn't matter how anyone else treats me. And that's really a gift. This program doesn't teach you to be like me or to have the same issues that I've had to work on or anybody else. It has taught all of us to go into our own writing and look at our own psyche and find out who we are and learn how to somehow approve and accept that this is the deal we get. This is the deal I got. It's a good deal. It's a good deal. I've had the body I've wanted. Sometimes I look at my arms and they're not chunky. And I always used to admire other people's arms that weren't chunky. Isn't that nice that I can have that? And to live with my husband who loves me and know that he loves me and live in harmony with somebody, oh, it's a miracle for 25 years. It's a miracle. And it's only because you don't have to worry about what you should work on. Life will show you. And for me, it's been going into the writing, going into the steps and learning how to live and learning how to be who I am and solve those problems and come to meetings and come to speak when I'm asked, and thank you for letting me share.
Good morning, everyone. My name's Ira. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I'm grateful to be here. The title of this session is No Matter What, Actions of Long-Timers. I think is that not. And I was just thinking about that just to qualify as a long-timer, old-timer, it's okay. The word old is okay. You know. Aged timer. You know, we don't have an aged timer here. But I came in through Alcoholics Anonymous. Just to qualify, my abstinence date. And by the way, I think, first of all, the reason for qualifying, there was a guy named Al Marin who made a career of living under Santa Monica Pier when he was drinking. And when I knew him, he had 50 years then, and he was a tough guy. And he used to say, he says, the purpose of sharing, Ira, is to inspire the alcoholic. You know, he would say it like that. And I came in through, though my primary addiction is definitely food, and I'm in the wrong town for that, because I'm in the entertainment business. I've been a music writer for most of my career, And I used to say a 325-pound trumpet player in L.A. is not a good career choice. Because this is a perception town, you know. I am, but that's okay. That's all right. Can you hear me now? Okay, great. Thank you. No, I appreciate that. So I came in my absence date September 7th of 1983. So this last January 7th is 28 years and 4 months. And I am a 100-pounder. My high weight was at least 325 to 330, thereabouts. When I came in, my driver's license at the time was not honest. Because most of my, as far as the state of California, I lied to everybody, you know. But it said that I was, at that point, I think that license said that I was 5'11 and weighed, I think that one said 248 or something like that, 255. Aside from the fact that, like, when I came into the program, I was down to about 310. I have never been over 5'6.5 in my life. And what my sponsor, who I, you know, I've had the same sponsor now for about 26 years of the time I've been absent, he says, that's what we do. He keeps reminding me I'm a human being. You know, I have to remember that. And so my original sponsor was a guy named Joe Harnell from AA, and he took me to a meeting in 1979 of Overeaters Anonymous. And he was not an overeater. He was an alcoholic. He was good looking and tall and had wavy hair. And I'm looking at this, my august panel, three blondes with nice hair. I don't think I have to share any more about what my problem is. But the issue was I wouldn't go in the room because there were about six or seven women there, and I had made a commitment to be there, and it scared me. And how I manifest fear a lot of times is anger or anxiety or whatever. And I said, I'm not going in there. And he said something very interesting, and this is the whole point of sharing, I think. He said, he got angry. He did that very well. And that's how I related to him. But he said, you can keep killing yourself if you want. It's your choice. Or you can come in and try and get better. It's up to you, or something to that effect. And I stormed off, which is something I was very good at, is storming off before something gets resolved. Hopefully that some of that, a lot of that has changed. But I remembered that quote 4 years later when I made the call. Nobody tried to get me into it, but that's what I remember. You never know what it is that you're going to say that's going to influence somebody. We think we do, you know, and I'm sure that a lot of us have had many experiences. I mean, I have an immense respect for all of my fellow panelists here, especially Terrell was one of the first men that I heard that was able to, you know, you come in feeling really hopeless and, you know, here's a guy that is a 100-pounder like me, reasonably, you know, he seemed to have a sense of confidence and bearing and so on. And we, you know, I knew nothing of him. You know, I learned later about his life, but the point was is that here was a guy that had weighed over 300 pounds that appeared to be a normal body size. See, here's the thing about spirituality that I understand, and I know it's no matter what, and I'll try and get to it, is you know, I think there's a mistake, as we do, you know, with literature, you hear stuff over and over again, you begin to think it's what it says. You know, a lot of people will say progress, not perfection. But in the book, the way it's written, it says spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection. And that's key for me. Along with one other thing that was a slogan that is really, since I'm a long timer, no matter what, is one day at a time. Finances have been terrible, as they have been for a lot of people. And the issues that I face now are different than the ones that I faced when I came in, though there are some that have always been there, and some keep coming back, and so on. I think that's probably true for most of us, but I can't speak for most of us. I can only speak for myself. So, it's one day at a time. It's spiritual. What does that mean for me? What it means for me is, first of all, the 12 steps and the traditions, and I've done my share of service here. I was at 15 World Service Conferences. And I even was willing to go to Albuquerque when they moved them out of L.A. That's how much? 5 minutes? Wow. Oh, 10 minutes. Yeah, I can't see, so it's, you know. I got the color thing, though. That's very cool. You know, green, yellow, red, you know, and all that. Yeah, I know you will, you know. But so what is this about? This is about spiritual progress. What's that mean? Well, if I understand this stuff, part of my problem, most of my problem is that I want things the way I want them. And when I don't get them, I get angry and upset, and I want to do something to quell that feeling, and I look for something physical, which I always did. I mean, this is the third time I lost 100 pounds or more. I mean, I certainly am qualified to sit here, you know. And I was angry at my first meeting because I finally go, I say, okay, here I am, world, OA. And I thought I'd be the fattest one there, and I wasn't. And that ticked me off. You know, that's how nuts I am, you know, or was. And I can't use the fact, well, I'm nuts. Although some rules of living have not served me well. Like if one is good, 52 will be fabulous. You know, I can never get enough. You know, that kind of stuff. But I wanted that to be quelled, and there was something here. So the first thing is surrender. What does that mean? You know, making a decision to turn my will and my life over. What does that mean? And this is what they told me in AA, is the third step is you do what you're told. You see, I need to hear stuff like that sometimes. And I think a good friend of mine who is also a long-timer in the Valley, Ken G., a lot of you guys know him, he says you can't sell this, you have to experience it. So what are we talking about here? It's no matter what, these experiences in 2009... I have experiences now that I didn't have when I first came in. For instance, I was diagnosed with a mild form of multiple sclerosis. I work out and have been weightlifting for years, and I still do it. And my dad died of the effects of this disease in 1978, before I came into the program, 3 months into his 62, so it's 3 months into his 63rd year, and November 30th was my 63rd birthday. And last year and I've been terrified that I was going to wind up like him. You know. And I'm still here, so obviously I'm not like him in that sense, although I am bald like he was, and of the three of us kids, I'm the one that physically, genetically, am the most like him. So that scared me. And like I said, when I'm scared, I'm angry. I get angry. That fear is the thing that drives me. Am I going to lose what I have? Am I not going to get what I want? Am I going to be dished out with stuff I don't want? You know, all that stuff that we hear. And what that first sponsor used to tell me, Joe, and I went to him once with 10 years of sobriety absence. I said, I'm feeling scared all the time. He says, Ira, you've been scared all your life, and you're going to continue to be scared till you're not scared anymore. And that's been my truth. So, like, what does this mean, spiritual progress? Well, if self-centeredness and all this obsession with me and being afraid all the time is my problem, what spirituality is about is maybe if I actually start thinking about other people, I'll start to feel better. the disease or the malady is, I don't want to feel better. I want you guys to fix me and don't let the door hit you on the way out. I got 5 minutes. Okay.
That's the yellow light.
I got it now. Okay. Also, what's happened is a lot of the anger has been replaced by sarcasm. Now, maybe you think that, well, what is that? That's not being spiritual, but it's a heck of a lot easier to laugh and smile and get a point across than it is to be screaming at people, because you're not getting it. I mean, I'm real good, like I said, at storming out. I storm out of an inner group. I had done service, and ironically enough, it was over the birthday party. It was like somebody in their infinite wisdom decided to ask outside inner groups to donate money so we could you guys could have better gifts, and I thought that was terrible. I still think it's terrible. However, the progress at that point was I didn't have to make a federal case if I just walked out. In other words, I didn't, storm out. I walked out. And I didn't look back. And like my sponsor says, Marty, who I've had for 26 years, he's 83. And he's engaged. This is the truth, honest to God. And he has macular degeneration. And he's still working on it. And he has to get shots in his eye. And he's doing it. And that inspires me. That a guy like that can, that could inspire me. It's not, and the whole point is, what the spiritual progress is how do I operate in this world? It's not just being spiritual at a meeting. It's how do I learn to give more? And give, by the way, is not a business transaction. Love is not a business transaction. Love, that's like, well, I'll be nice to you if I get something. And all over the literature, and I was told to read 2 pages a day of the big book, the AA 12 and 12, and I used to do that on a daily basis, then I stopped doing it, I started doing it again, and I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, where Bill Wilson says, I feel so great, I keep wanting to tell people about it. That's how it works. In other words, I have to manifest this physically. That's, I think, what the topic, no matter what, means. I have to manifest this in this world. The 12th step, which is all this whole thing is about for me, as a compulsive overeater and an alcoholic, is I have a spiritual awakening. What's that mean? Well, according to the appendix on spiritual experience, it's a change in personality which enables me to overcome overeating. And I have changed. People tell me that. My wife tells me that. I'm basically, I think, somewhat easier to get along with. Somewhat. What's the second part of the 12th step? It seems to be in threes, all of this stuff, as we tried to carry this message. And what I learned about that is I can carry a message, I can't deliver it to anybody. And how do I carry a message? It's the example I set. In other words, I can be talking this stuff and Mr. Spirituality, and if I go out and have, and like we used to have, my home meeting was a 100-pounders meeting on Wednesday nights in Reseda, and we used to go do coffee at Denny's till 3 o'clock in the morning, just like the people here in L.A. would have their own places. And we got kicked out of there. We got kicked out of several Denny's in the valley. And the reason we got kicked out of there is we would occupy tables, it would be 20, 25 of us, and we would manifest that stuff in restaurants. It's just like a bunch of alcoholics in a bar, Like we wouldn't leave tips, we'd stiff the weight, all kinds of stuff like that, thinking, isn't this cute? I get to do this because I'm an overeater, so I don't have to be responsible. Gee, why can't I continue to abstain one day at a time? See, steps are in order for a reason. I got 1 minute to finish. Then the third part, so I have to set example. That's all I care. The third part of the 12th step, and the most important, is to practice these principles in all my affairs. Whether I have MS or not, finances, we had to go through a foreclosure. We were able, and I'm no accountant, but we were able to get a loan modification. That's a miracle. I'm thinking of changing careers. I've gotten credits on 70 films, and I'd like to teach, give something back, keep the art going. That's what I'm into. I'm working on another large piece of music. And I remember being in a meeting, and I have been nominated, and I'm not trying to be grandiose. It's just part of like what happens when you are normal size and you stop overeating. I've been nominated for a Pulitzer Prize in music twice. I didn't win, but it's really nice to be nominated. And I couldn't do that if I'm only thinking about how are they going to love what I do. You know, if I'm thinking that stuff, I'm dead. So I get to practice these principles. Now, there's a very interesting word there, practice. I don't master these. I get to practice this over and over again, and the reason that I'm not perfect is the only time I'm going to be perfect is when I'm not here anymore. Because then I won't be hassling anybody. You know? So I get to practice this in all my affairs. Not just at OA meetings. So guess what? I had to take some medicine. I do what I'm told, and I feel better. Thanks for letting me share. Keep coming back.
I'm April. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi.
Hi. So, remember to breathe. I want you to take a deep breath, and might want to take it with me. I'm not a morning person, and I got up early and I went to the meditation because I meditate and I am always looking for new information about meditation. And one thing that impressed me about the woman who led it today, Chris, and who I've taken one other workshop with in another event, was that she wasn't afraid to pause and think before she spoke. And I always think I have to be filling the air, you know. So it really is about acceptance for me. Whatever you guys have said, it just reinforces that what I have learned. So let me qualify. I came into the United States. I came into OA in December of 1975, and I count my abstinence from February 11th, 1981. So that's almost 6 years. And that was important because even though it was a very scary, hard number of years where I would see people come into Overeaters Anonymous and get it and become shining stars, and I felt like I wasn't, and I was binging. I was trying. I would take sponsors, and I'd work with them, and I would binge, and I would take them, and I would binge, and I wasn't able to keep going. But what's ironic about that judgment I had about those years and the pain I had is that may be the most important part of my story to some of you. That I had 6 years where it was awful. And, you know, Marla and I were talking earlier, I keep coming back. I keep coming back. This is the last house on the block for me. So I have to tell you, when I take notes, there's always a part of me that's just so judgmental that I'm not orderly and I haven't numbered things. So I don't know if you guys can see, but I have a piece of paper with things circled and starred of things I have to tell you. And then I have to understand, you know, it's just like in meditation, what I've learned is I don't take a piece of paper with me when I meditate to remember the important thoughts, because I am trusting now that whatever it is I'm supposed to remember from the meditation and take with me, I will. So the topic for me, the way I interpreted the topic for me is, what do I do no matter what? What has sustained me in this program? Okay, so again, back to my qualification. I've lost about 60 pounds, between 50 and 60 pounds. But that last 10 pounds, that was really about 7 years ago that they came out, where I really felt finally that I could stop feeling like I wasn't there yet in terms of my physical recovery. I really felt like, I don't know, it just wasn't right. I'm just going to tell you things that are just coming at me as they come. So one of the things I've learned, again, this is about acceptance, is that when my husband begins to talk, I realize that I tune in about 4 sentences in to whatever he's saying. And I've always been so angry at myself, like I'm not very nice, that's really mean, that I'm ADD, that da-da-da-da, and I'm afraid to tell him. Until recently, I realized for me then it may be just the strength turned a little ways, which is that I Velcro myself to the past thought. I'm so busy inside with my circus that I have Velcroed myself to one of my circusy thoughts. I cannot un-Velcro it to begin to listen to someone on the outside world for a while. So we now have a code. He gets it. Once I explain it, once I understand it, and I'm kind of at peace with it, and that's, I'm not angry at myself for being who I am, we have a code where I say, just say blah, blah, blah for a couple of sentences. And he does. He says, blah, 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 blah. Are you there yet? You know? And then I like un-Velcro myself, and then I can begin to listen to him. It's all part of accepting this is who I am. And I feel I came into the program when I was about 21 or something, 22. I almost feel like I couldn't have done that until I got older, and some of it honestly may be hormones, you know, where I just, there's a calmness that settles into our bones for me. So an example of interacting with my husband recently was I put on a peace rally in 2003. It was a big deal for me in the South Bay. I had never done anything like that before, and we had 200 signs. We had this big sign workshop for about 2 weeks in my house. They were beautiful. They were the names of each soldier who had died and their ages, and they were big, huge hearts that were broken. It was called the No More Broken Hearts Rally, and it was around Valentine's Day of 2003. And those signs have been in our garage ever since, sometimes being loaned out for various peace rallies. And my husband has gently said, I can't wait for world peace so I can have my garage back. You know, he's just a kind, kind man. And so finally, I said to him that I would, you know, send out to my email list, does anybody want these signs? You know, you can use them on the back for artwork. And I came home one day, and he thought that since I had gotten no response to that email that I sent out to my list, that therefore he could recycle them. But what happens to me, and what also happens to him sometimes, is there's still stuff going on that I plan to do. I just haven't shared it with him. But I think he should know that. He should have ESP. And so I came. I was hurt and furious because he had carefully taken the stakes off each thing and put the spot, and he was going to put in the recycling, and I was like furious and hurt and scared that I was a bad person for even thinking that because he was so good and he's held him on to it, you know, and judgmental about myself for even feeling like that and then feeling that anger, and blah, 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 until I realized we were able to talk a little bit about it. I realized a couple things. One is I'm so fearful of that feeling in the room, in the house between us when there's a disagreement. He and I are both people that will tiptoe out around each other to make sure everything is nice, and therefore we can't always get to the bottom and be satisfied with what happens. It's just make nice, you know, that whole Al-Anon thing. And so what I found is as I've been able to accept an uncomfortable feeling like that air in the house where it's sort of icky and sit with that uncomfortable feeling, I have been able to sit with hunger and to let and to just let myself be hungry and to not always eat so much. But it was really part and parcel, sort of waking up to feeling feelings and sitting with them, even though I've done everything I could to resolve them, and they didn't feel good still. I did all the good things like a good Girl Scout. They still didn't feel good. And in the same way, I saw I was able to be hungry and to let that just be. I am run by fear, and when I feel hungry, I want to run to something to fix it because it scares me. So the resolution is I have the posters on Craigslist, and I've given some away to friends, and I'm gradually being willing for us to recycle them or to give them to art teachers or nothing. And I also understand that I won't completely feel good about it and that there's some emotional stuff around it because I was so proud of what we did. You know, it was such a neat project that I want to hold on to things, but they're just things. I have my favorite mantra. I've been in OA for so many years, and there is a woman in program named Doreen, and there used to be a meeting at her house. And above her toilet, when you go to the bathroom, it would say, I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be, doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing, and doing it exactly right. I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be, doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing, and doing it exactly right. Which is all about self-acceptance. Where I am today, being present. So another thought that's coming to my mind, so I will share it, which is, very recently I've gotten again to reading two meditation books at night and then trying to remember what they said the next day. That's a challenge for me. My memory has never been stellar. I call my husband Bing, you know, like there's Google and Bing. So if I can't think of anything, I ask Bing and he always knows. He can read my mind. Now he recently started to play April Jeopardy movies for $700, and I say to him, who's that blonde lady in the, and he goes, yeah, she's Meryl Streep, you know, anyways. Nothing to do with anything. So I was reading these two books, and I couldn't remember the one word I was trying to remember the next day. 10 more minutes, thank you. And then my son, who's 22, who's this amazing, wonderful, kind, gentle, generous, funny, competent young man. I'm so proud to be around this man. He said, you know, you're very visual. Why don't you think of some cartoony thing, which is, you know, a mnemonic way of memory. So I was doing all these fancy things, and there's an orange, and there's a tangerine, and someone has a bow and arrow, and, you know, then the next morning I'd remember the bow and arrow and the orange. I'd remember nothing about what I was supposed to remember. And then I came to think, okay, how about just the one word? Maybe one word is about peace and one word is about acceptance. Maybe I can remember those. And finally, one of the meditation was about keeping it simple. And I put one of the meditation books away. And now I just have one meditation book by my nightstand. And I write that word on the palm of my hand the night before. And it mostly wears off, but there's just enough, like today's is accept the past. And what comes to mind for that is that when my dad died, I was 22. And I was in my last week of college. He died very suddenly. He was 56. And I have gone back to the months and the year prior to his death so many times, blaming myself for not understanding that he had symptoms of potential heart attack that we didn't pick up. We also, as a culture, didn't pick that. He had been to a doctor 3 months prior who gave him a glowing report because we didn't understand what to measure at that point. And what I'm understanding more now is Dad was supposed to die at 56. I was supposed to be who I was when he was that way. He's happier, I'm happier. It is what it is. I have to accept that to move on. Okay, so what are some things I do? I went to see a play based on AA last week. It was a reading of a play in our local church, and it was about, I don't remember the title, but it was like The Founding of AA, Bill W. and Dr. Bob. And what was drilled into me was to be of service. That two people stayed sober because they were of service. And that they would try to get other people sober, but in fact what was happening all that time during their failure was they were staying sober. And I had two temporary sponsors at that time, just recently, where I said, I don't really have time to sponsor you, but I'll work with you until you find a sponsor. And I thought, just sponsor them, April. Just do it. And one of them has dropped away, and that's his path, and I accept that. And I know, just as Barbara has talked about and Ira talked about, which is, it's fine. I had 6 years of heartbreak till I came to where I had to be. And God bless him, he'll do what he needs to do. And the other woman I'm working with is such a pleasure. It's such a pleasure. Okay, so here's what I do. Every day, I'm a writer, and when I stand on my computer, the first thing I do, no matter what the deadline, no matter what, I begin my 10-step, which at the end of the day I send to my sponsor. And my 10-step includes 5 things I'm grateful for. You don't need to do this. This is my blueprint, not yours. it really drives me nuts when people tell me, this is how you have to get well. And then I think, oh, wait, what did she say? What was the 10th one? Because if I don't do the 10th one, I'm not going to get well. And I don't want to do that to you because, and I've learned, for example, okay, here I am drifting off again, but I was ordering some CDs today, and one of them was like 5 CDs long, and I had to be very honest with myself, I'm not going to listen to it. So even though it's very valuable, I'm not going to listen to it. Or when I have a book and I want to read it and it's clearing my bedside table, if I want to read this, I will get it out of the library. I'm going to give this away. I just have to be honest. So I write down 5 things for which I'm grateful for. I tell her about my day, blah, 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 blah. I don't know why she cares to read it, but I need to write it, and she's happy to receive it. And sometimes I come to interesting conclusions, and I learn from them, and just something I just need to spill it out and know that someone is receiving it. I write 5 things I'm grateful about, and then I write every single thing I eat that day. Every single thing I eat. And if I, 5 more minutes, thank you. And if I send it off, I usually send it off late at night before I go to bed. If I have something else, I get back on the computer that night and I write it down and send it to her. I call it my addendum. So what is my abstinence? It used to be 3 meals a day, nothing in between, no sugar, weighed and measured, and that was for 10 years. That's what began for me, and it was very, very important because it got me honest. Then when I was pregnant, it didn't work in my body. I could not be, with 3 meals a day was not enough to sustain what my body was doing. And I had to learn to let go. And what then was left? I don't do sugar. Eventually what it's evolved into, I don't do sugar and I am absolutely honest. And that starts with self-honesty, which is why I send off the food and then I send off an addendum right away if there's an issue. Do I have sometimes big meals? Absolutely. Do I sometimes eat over feelings? I do. And that's why it's my abstinence may not be your abstinence. The other thing I encourage people to do if they feel like, oh my God, I've screwed up. One of the most beautiful things that ever happened to me was when someone said to me, why don't you wait and judge your abstinence in 30 days? Keep going. And 30 days from now, look back and decide, was that a slip? A break, or was that okay? Because if you needed to start over, you'll have 30 days when you go back and look at it. You know, it's just, it's whatever works for you. I exercise, I meditate, which I didn't start till about 10, 15 years ago. And meditation to me was harder than climbing Mount Everest. Sitting still for someone like me, and I thought I could never do it, and I would say that I meditate about 4 times a week right after an exercise class because I was taught that meditation is a very active state, not almost an asleep state. And so I would say in that period of time, the times that I've meditated, maybe 30% of those meditations I felt like, oh, I've gotten there. That golden cobalt blue place that you're supposed to get to, whatever that is, maybe less than that. And the other times I'm going, okay, it's over. You know, at least I did it. But I can tell you that my very best friend in the whole world says, you haven't meditated this week, have you? He knows. He knows if I haven't. So I can't always tell that it's changed me, but it's changed me. I'm learning to listen. I learn both to share, to be honest, and to really, but also I'm learning to not share. My brother-in-law said many years ago when my sister said, well, we were at a cocktail party and she knew all about that thing, but you did too, and why didn't you tell her how much she knew? And he said, well, now I know what she knows and I know what I know. And I thought, what an interesting, strange way to live, to not jump in all the time. So I'm trying. Like even when I was listening to these amazing speakers, most of the time my brain was going about me, me, me. That's fine. It's human. And I accept that when I go to these things, if I just get one idea, maybe from the whole day, it's been a good day. You know, so acceptance, acceptance, acceptance. About reframing, maybe I close with this. So I'm dealing with my 89-year-old mother a lot and my 91-year-old uncle a lot and learning and feeling I never want to be that old. Just drive me off a cliff, please. But there's a lot of negativity in one of them. And so I was saying to my husband last night, as we were driving home from something, I said, you know, I've never liked the number 5. And I don't like the color green, never have. I'm beginning to like it better now. And then I thought, whoa, let's do some reframing here. What is this? You know, it's like, that's the stupidest, first of all. Who cares? And why should he care that you don't like the number 5? Plus, my son was born on the 5th of the month, so I really had to reframe it. And so I said, but it's interesting that the people who do are interesting people, or but I really like 27. You know, it's like, can I just reframe this, please? Okay, and one more thing about, one more minute, about amendments, or commitments. So not only do I write my food down and I share it and I am spiritual to the best of my ability, but in very practical ways, once a month, about 25 folk musicians come to my house and we play music. And when they would leave and I was cleaning up from the food, it was a very scary time for me, and I would very often eat more than I needed to. Didn't eat sugar, it was part of my absence. I always wrote it down, committed it, told my... But that didn't work for me. It just didn't work. So now, every third Tuesday of every month, I call someone locally in OA that I respect, and even if I text it to her or call her machine, and I say, after the folk club, when the last heel leaves my doorstep, there is no eating. And if that means I don't clean up, don't clean up. And that has changed that day before, because it's amazing how, even if I forget that I've made that commitment, it rises up and reminds me as that last person closes the door. Damn, I didn't have enough to eat today. Too bad. You made a commitment. So, to conclude, I'm so glad you're here. And remember to breathe. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Terrell. I'm a compulsive overeater. And qualify of 33 years of abstinence, which means I got abstinent when I was 6 years old. You know, I'm an old timer. This long timer, old timer. Maybe I was too young I became an old timer when I was young and didn't make any difference to me. And my top weight is, as Ira mentioned, is about 325 pounds, give or take. So no matter what, when I heard that topic, I was thinking, you don't eat no matter what. Why am I still absent? After 33 years, what? I mean, when I go to long-termers panels, I want to hear, why you? Like, why you? Like, what made you be different than what we hear so much of, the, you know, come in and out, come in and out, come in and out. Just, you know, you get a few years and go out, or get a few days and go out. Why us? What makes us different, in a sense? And I always think back upon my past, my experience. Because Lord knows, I've known other people who can quote the big book, page and line number, but they can't stay abstinent. So it's not the book knowledge of Overeaters Anonymous, of Alcoholics Anonymous, big book. It's not the book knowledge of reading the OA 12 and 12. There's something else that affects us, that makes us long-timers. So what is it? What is it that makes me a long-timer, an old-timer? And I think that's what I get to share today. And I know one thing that I firmly believe the reason why I've been absent for so long, and, you know, when you look at this panel, it's pretty amazing, is that I believe to my very, very core being that I'm a compulsive overeater, that I am not normal when it comes to food. And I have constant reminders by food that I'm not a normal eater. And I hang out with a lot of normies, a lot of friends. Most of my friends are normal. They don't eat the way I do. They don't think about food the way I do. They don't have that love affair with food the way I do. I'm still a compulsive reader. Now, I'm 33 years of abstinence, and my abstinence is no sugar and no wheat products. You know, so it's been no bread, no sugar for 33 years. And for the first 18, 19 years, it was no, only three meals a day and nothing in between. And I dropped that because I started taking medicine that was just turning my gut, and it was just impossible to eat certain times. It was just, like, so I told my sponsor, I eat when I eat, and that's just the way it's got to be. And she was okay with that, you know. So, like I said, it says in our literature that that idea that someday, somehow, I'm going to eat like another compulsive eater has got to be smashed. And I love that that word, smashed. Because smashed means to me that, like, if I break a plate in half, I can get out some crazy glue and I can glue that plate back together. Thinking that maybe one more time I'm going to be able to eat like a normal person. Or look at other how other people eat and go, I can eat like that. Or look at people I sponsor and go, well, maybe I can eat sugar or maybe I can eat pasta.